say like this. The premise starts off with what Chaim Gerner says. That God gave us the Torah because it's good. Right? But not, it's good because he gave it to us. Right? Mm-hmm. In other words, that there is an inherent good in living the life of Torah. Right? And those who live it will naturally have a better life. Aside from the fact that, in other words, it's like this. We don't say that if a person does a mitzvah, that God comes down and gives him an ashmi. We say that it's as a natural result of living the correct way, you will have a better life. Okay, so therefore we say it's subject to analysis as to why exactly this life is better. And if you understand man, you'll really be able to see why this is the best life. Right?
Okay. Yeah. What side do you want to say, man?
Say what?
What
side do you want to say? The statement is that God gave us the Torah because it's good.
So it's good for us.
So he gave us Torah because it's good, right? But it's not good because he gave it to us. It's good because he gave it to us means like this. It means that really, that's not good. The Lord didn't give a favor. It's good for him, you see? So, like you have to listen to the king. The king gives out a law. And the king gives law for himself, right? So why is it good to listen to the king's law? For a reason. He'll kill you. I don't know. There's nothing really good about it. He gave you the law because it's good for him. See, the Torah doesn't work that way. The Torah was given because this is really the best thing for you. So if you really had a sound knowledge of man, and you understood man 100%, you'd really see why it's good, because there has to be a reason why it's good. You understand what I mean? There has to be a reason there. It's not, in other words, in accordance with the way the world is, this is really a good thing, right? So therefore, if you understand it rationally, you'll be able to see why it's good. Right?
Okay. How do you know that's true, though?
Why do we say that? Because there is nothing else, there is no other good in life besides that. Every good that any man can think of always has to be tied in with some type of pleasure. Take for instance, give me a case where there's a good without a pleasure. In other words, what would be a good if it doesn't satisfy, if there is no pleasurable...
The burden of proof is on you.
What do you mean? No, it's on you, but...
No, because there's no other good. There's no other good. In other words,
no, I'm saying, you're positing something.
Is there any other thing than a state of pleasure and a state of pain?
Those two exclusive
things. Right. Okay. Now, of those two states, which one is the better? Well, which one would a person rather have? I mean, there's no such thing as a good. In other words, which one is better for the organism? That it experiences pleasure, experiences pain. There's only two possibilities.
There's no immediate state.
Or nothing. Okay, let's say nothing. Ultimately, it's good, given all the mobbos, whatever it is. It has to be so. So, what does it mean? It means that eventually it's good. It really has to be ultimate pleasure, right? So, once we start with that premise, what was the first step today?
Before you get to that, is doing justice, is that good?
Some type of pleasure, some type of good. That's it, okay.
The pleasure is knowing that you're going to have benefit, not when we'll start believing that, whatever. That is
pleasure,
the essence of the pleasure.
We're not saying whether the pleasure is whether you know it or not. We're saying the pleasure has to be there somewhere. Has to be there, whether you know it or not.
So,
right.
Another guy's driving a truck, another guy's starting tomorrow.
You have to prove which one is greater, right?
Right.
Okay. So, what was it? The next thing he said is,
Let's examine other areas. Right, see, let's take a different thought and see who is the best person in thought. Who gets the most pleasure by taking in a thought?
So the question was, how could you ever even discuss the subject? Because each guy's going to have his own thing, right?
Right.
So now, of course, you can't say, let's say he's interested in making money. So let's say he's going to go into the most lucrative profession, right? Okay, now the point is, but each profession is lucrative in a different way. You'll find a lawyer that's immensely wealthy. Right? You find a dentist that's tremendously wealthy. You find a doctor that's much wealthier than a certain dentist. I mean, so therefore, can you say that it's all subjective or not? We say that inherently the profession lends itself more to those money-making than the different professions, right?
Right.
Yeah. So the point is, what the person has to find out is, which objectively lends itself more to those money-making, then he has to decide among those, which one is for him. You understand? There's two factors. Right? Insofar as he could take that, let's say that profession should be shoveling manure. So I'll say, yeah, it's very good for money-making, but I just can't take it. But the point is, you see, the point is that he has to be able to first objectively know which offers inherently the most money, right? Okay, and then insofar as he could do it, then he's then that's the one he should do, right? The same thing with the same thing over here. We cannot say, for instance, that a person, an ox, should learn Torah. Food, Torah is the best thing. Say an ox should learn Torah, right? That's ridiculous, because he wasn't created for that. He doesn't have the means, and he doesn't have the ability to do it, right? But insofar, if we could show that this is the greatest enjoyment, then insofar as the person can do it, that's what he should do. Right? Now we get an example. Let's say the person has a chance. He can do two things. He could play chess. Well, we have to understand first is objectively which one gives the most enjoyment. Then the individual has to apply it to himself. You see? But we do maintain that if a person has no ability to enjoy learning, that definitely this argument won't help many because he simply is out of the question. You have the Gemara on the floor. The person learned 5 years. You saw it in the Akhloka. That's it. Not the end. It's not from the Shemir. From the Mashiach. That's not
what
we're talking about. We're talking about involvement in learning is far. So that's not for him.
How is the proof that you can distinguish in other areas?
Why this is the best thing? Then you will have more reason to do it. Then if you don't have knowledge, and somebody tells you, let's say for instance, a guy tells you, look, this is the best thing to do. Say, I believe that guy. But you really, it's only belief, you really don't understand why it's better, right? So therefore, you can't really do it as well. You can't really put that much into it because you don't. One party doesn't follow. However, you definitely do that much better. You understand what you're doing. And besides, you haven't shown that somebody's doing the right thing. Right? Do it objectively. In business, we know. You take a look at the scale. They have all scale professions. This guy makes this amount of money. That guy makes that amount of money. It's all chart. It's not a chart. You never question a chart.
Sorry.
If you want to pull a fraud, all you have to do is make a phony graph. Give it out. Everybody will be a phony graph. Everybody has to do it. Written down on the paper. Numbers. So it's done like this. Exactly. Let's say you have two things. One you could do an hour a day, the other one you could do 12 hours a day. Which one should you indulge in?
12 hours.
We're talking about an enjoyable experience.
12 hours, right?
So therefore we say that insofar as enjoyment is concerned, that enjoyment which can operate for you for 12 hours a day is superior to the enjoyment that can operate 1 hour a day. Assuming, now this is one factor. You understand? We're not dealing with a And the important thing to remember is that we're isolating different factors. Later, we have to add the whole thing up together. But first, we have to isolate different factors. Somebody will immediately jump and say, but in that 1 hour, I have more enjoyment than the other 12.
No, we're saying it's equal.
The answer is we're isolating the fact. In order to isolate the fact, we have to assume it's all equal. Then later, we'll see. There's a physical enjoyment, and there's one whole enjoyment.
What a genius over here. Amazing.
You have the physical and the non-physical. Okay?
The physical has to be inherently limited.
Why is the physical fucking limited? It must be limited. Why?
Because it depends on the physical.
You must change the external world. You must have a boat. You must be in the ocean. You must have a good day, right? You must have a proper amount of wind. You must have a proper amount of sun. I mean, all the requirements.
Water.
So therefore, to indulge in such a thing, we have tremendous requirements, right? So therefore, it's inherently limited by its very nature. Anything which is physical requires. This requires a physical situation. So therefore, this requires a physical situation. So, okay. So therefore, the physical pleasure. The best thing is like this. The best thing is that we have physical pleasure. Okay, now under this factor over here. Is that limited or is that not limited?
Sure, you have to, by the mere nature of this, you have to be in a certain condition.
What? You have to be listening to music.
Now let's see, non-physical. So therefore, what's the next point? The next point was the, what about the art?
Right?
Okay, so now you have three groups here. You have the physical, you have the...
And the non-physical, you have the intellect and the...
The internal world. Right. One is the emotional, that's the art, and the other one is the intellectual. The other one is intellectual. So this one I have to change this intellectual. Okay? Okay. Now, in terms of the time factor, so we say this is limited, this is what?
Not limited.
What about this one? Also not limited, right?
Can physical pleasure have to be limited within time?
By definition. Since it's physical, you must have a physical situation. So in order to have a physical situation, it has to be limited. Like somebody, let's say guy's a wealthy guy. You mean what?
Music.
Like music, right? Okay, he means like art.
He thinks about it.
Definition of the art. The art is that which relates to the emotions, right?
Yeah.
Okay? So the art is produced by the emotions, right? Okay, now we said that the emotions are affected. In other words, a person will write sad music if he's sad. But what happened to Beethoven when he wrote the...
Lost his ear.
Going deaf. Something else. Somebody lost his wife or something, I remember. Somebody had the list here, something I know about. Anyways, that's his obvious argument. Since the art is dependent upon, since it's the emotions, right? So it's dependent upon an emotional state of mind, right?
No.
But what brings about an emotional state of mind? An external environment, a physical, right? External environment. So therefore, he's dependent upon external environment in order to bring about.
But he can still have it. There's always a physical environment, right?
Yeah.
There's always some type of emotion
that's not true.
Just because the environment might be sad doesn't mean the guy can be sad.
He still has some emotion, doesn't he? Always
say guys on the bucket.
Not necessarily emotion, they want to.
Let's say a guy's in no mood. Since it's an emotion, the one who can express that emotion best is he who's under the sway of that emotion. In other words, you can't express an emotion musically. You can't express it unless you're under the sway of that emotion. An expression of certain mood.
I agree with you.
You can't say he's in a neutral state. He's oblivious to emotion. That's impossible. The intellectual is oblivious to emotion.
He still can get pleasure from writing a piece.
I don't remember the specifics, but I know that I remember the general concept. That the emotion definitely plays a role in how they live their lives. So different occurrences in their lives plays a role in their production of music. Affected by the emotions, since it's an emotional thing. I think we have this with anybody else. That wasn't basically.
Please
don't
know
what I'm saying.
Okay, definitely.
All right.
Now we have to go to the stores.
Physical conditions and emotional conditions.
Well, the only reason emotional conditions are no good is because they depend on the physical. So.
Well, when we say limited, we mean that the mood itself is a cause of the enjoyment. But the point is they had to be a tremendous amount of internal strife which is expressed on the canvas. Right? So it's an emotional thing. There's no question about it. It's an emotional thing which involves itself in certain states of mind which have to come into being is they due to external sources and also due to inner conflicts. So therefore we say... Let's say, for instance, a person starts music. He starts to work. Tries to put together a musical composition. Now, let's say, for instance, he starts off singing the first part, and then he sees he made a mistake. Right? He has to change a few notes. Right? Now, is the mistake in itself error? Right? So therefore, he can't have the enjoyment of the musical mistake. Right. In other words, music is only correct music. That which is non-musical is not music, and the enjoyment is out of music. So whenever he makes a mistake and he has something that's non-musical, so therefore there's no enjoyment in that mistake, right?
Right.
Okay, same thing in art. The person starts to draw the one on the canvas. He makes a mistake, he has to erase it. There's no appreciation of art. On the contrary, as soon as he put on the canvas, he says, hey, it's terrible. Gotta take that off, right? So therefore there was no enjoyment in that.
Also physical pleasure, the guy misses a shot.
Also on the physical pleasure. If the person wants to play tennis, so when he misses, right, or has a bad day, let's say he goes out fishing, and he catches a boot. So what happens? So there's no enjoyment.
No, that's bad.
There's no enjoyment.
When you lose, you don't reach
right?
the peak of the enjoyment.
Oh, right? Boy, you lose.
Whenever he loses, whenever he fails, so this is pain, right?
Okay.
So this is the point that...
Is that a fact right there?
Yes.
Whenever you lose,
Yeah, that's a mistake. In other words, music is only something which is musically beautiful. If it's musically terrible, there's no enjoyment, there's pain. Right? So whenever he makes a mistake, so therefore he has to have pain, correct?
Okay.
Now what about... Okay. Now what about learning?
Mistake is joyful in itself.
In learning there's no such thing as a mistake. Why is no such thing as a mistake? Because the enjoyment of learning is the enjoyment of gaining knowledge, right? And if I know that something is not true, is that knowledge?
Yes.
So therefore when I make a mistake and I discover that that's not true, didn't I gain knowledge?
Yes.
So therefore even a mistake is knowledge?
Yes.
Isn't that argument irrefutable?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like it was very good.
Yes.
You always mean you're learning because you want to be a great person. You're learning because this is really the greatest thing. Inherently, this is the greatest thing. Not because you want to be a great person. So if you're learning for inherent reasons of learning itself, then you can never have a minute that there's no enjoyment. Because every step's enjoyable. You never say, oh, now I see what that's got there, you see? Done, you see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on, quick.
Go ahead. No, you're going to have to be, you see? Except in learning, it's the only area you'll have no mistakes. Is there a mistake? It's limited by mistakes, right? Now let's get down. So in other words, when you're on the tennis court, this is what we have. When you're on the tennis court for half an hour, right? So you have to consider all the pain till you got there, till you got your racket, your shoelace ripped, till all the different pains that involved until you got there. Right? Then you got there and there was no court. You had to wait for the court. Finally, you got the court. You're on the court. You're ready to play. You missed the shot, right? All these things. Now let's take the case where the guy is waiting. Before suicide, he's waiting to get one shot where he gets an enjoyment. And the Avishna helps him, he gets one shot, tremendous, right down the line.
Hey.
The other guy was on the other side of the court. Oh, man. Right? Now the question is, let's take him when he's at that moment of pleasure. That's the peak. That's the peak of the whole game. That's really the thing, right? Now let's take that enjoyment itself, and we showed an inherent limitation in the enjoyment itself at the time when he's getting the enjoyment. What was the limitation, remember?
I can't.
Involved to a greater degree. If you have two people involved in learning in this room, right, and somebody walks in the door, one guy notices the guy that walked in the door, another guy doesn't notice the guy that walked in the door, right? Okay, who is more involved in learning? The guy that noticed the one that walked in the door, or the guy that
didn't notice?
The guy that didn't notice. Why? Because his total psychic energy is involved in learning, right? There's no energy left to observe what's in the door, right? Okay. But now we see, look at this. What was the next point? I'll suppose, look at this. In the physical, if the enjoyment is of the physical, so there must be an awareness of the physical condition, right? Like, for instance, let's say a person's playing tennis, right? Now, while he's playing tennis, if a cat will walk across the court, will he notice the cat or not?
I don't know.
Well, notice it, he has to, because part of the game involves
watching
the physical condition.
He wouldn't
right?
be able to hit it. He wouldn't be able to watch the ball. He wouldn't watch
right.
anything.
So therefore, in order to get the enjoyment, there has to be a certain amount of energy must be directed to observing the physical conditions which are necessary for the enjoyment, right? The guy's skiing down a trail. If he saw a bear walking across the trail while he was skiing, obviously he'd notice it, right? Because I was so involved in skiing, I didn't notice the bear. It's impossible. Because, by definition, skiing necessarily involves a certain amount of the energy must be diverted towards an awareness of the physical situation, right? So therefore, the person that's involved in learning has more enjoyment because he can be completely involved in the activity, whereas the person that's involved in the physical activity necessarily...
Some energy must be directed towards
the maintaining of the physical situation, towards making sure that the physical situation, which is the basis of his enjoyment, is always being maintained properly. You see? Therefore, a certain amount of energy is being used.
But really, that watching in a court.
There's another limitation, that there's a certain amount of pain that is necessary in order to get the enjoyment. You understand? So he's saying the limitation means not merely that it requires the situation, but the pain, all right? Okay. You're qualifying with it. Really, so the physical means involving this one, and certainly this means involving
time plus pain, time and pain. Limited time and also involve pain.
That's right. Involving pain.
Well, because you're not asking.
One of them is insofar as pain and pleasure is concerned. So for instance, let's say a person is very thirsty, right? Person is very thirsty, so he enjoys drinking. But he only enjoys drinking as long as he's thirsty. Right?
Right.
Now, is being thirsty, is that painful or is that pleasurable?
That's painful.
Okay. So therefore, the pleasure of drinking only exists as long as he has the pain of thirst.
Right?
So such a pleasure of necessity, or you might say the pleasure is one which is derived from the removal of the pain. Right? Okay. Now, so there are certain pleasures. We see right now that there are certain pleasures, like eating when you're hungry. If the emperor, tremendous enjoyment. Why? Because, simply.
You're removing the pain.
Oh, it's not really eating, it's the removal of the pain. So that type of an enjoyment which is involved in pain, that's another type, that's another grouping that we have to make, and that certainly must be the lowest type of enjoyment. Why? Because that inherently, in its very nature is based upon the removal of pain. It's based upon pain. Right? Okay, now we have to classify which enjoyments are of that nature. Of that type. We want to be fair. We have to use all enjoyments. See, which enjoyments are based on that type of pain? Well,
what causes?
I don't want to say, I'll tell you, there is a psychological definition, but it's so abstract that once you use it already, it's not going to have any meaning in terms of this argument. It's not going to make any difference. See, the pain in psychology is a sum of energy, which doesn't have a base. But it doesn't really help anything. So let's just stick with the fact that if a person is starving, he has pain. Right? A person is starving, yes. Isn't it true that a person starving experiences pain? What do we care how it works inside of us? What do we care how it works?
Because I can say that's the...
Hey, when you're not involved in pleasure, you're in pain. You say you're in a neutral state. We're doing anything. Sitting in the tree, relaxing. We're in a neutral state. You understand? When that mental state involves an unconscious type of pain, a subtle pain, we're not concerned with that. But we're saying there's something more than that. We're saying there are certain enjoyments which are just the removal of a state of pain. Like a guy's in jail and you release him from jail. And he has tremendous enjoyment. What's the enjoyment? He didn't really give him anything. Just release him from a painful situation. He tied his arms up, right? And his arms were like this for 3 hours. Now you let go. So he's going to have an enjoyment. But that enjoyment is nothing more than the release of pain. There's no real positive enjoyment in that. Well, but if you give a person, let's say you give a person something that's tasty, so it has nothing to do with pain. It's simply a new enjoyment. So all we're saying is that there's two types of pleasures. There's a pleasure which is nothing more than the release of pain. And then there's a pleasure which is a real pleasure. Okay?
Right. Both, yes, still feel pleasure?
It's a pleasure, but one of them necessarily involves pain inherently, so that's a bad thing.
But the feeling is different.
Right. Okay. Now, somebody might argue, they might say, but no, it's worth it. It's true that there's pain in that pleasure, but the pain is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because when you have the pain, then you get the pleasure.
Right.
So we say to such a person, so we recommend itching powder. Because he can simply enjoy himself all his life by just taking itching powder, sprinkling it over his body, right? And then scratching himself. Therefore, we'll lose every pain.
You got some?
Solve his problems. Or he could do like this. He could starve himself for a couple of days. And then enjoy eating, right? Or he could tie his arms up and twist his form, right?
Then he won't have the pleasure would be broken up, like if he stops for a day and eats another.
But I say it's worth it. But I say it's worth it. If you're going to tell me that it's worth it, so then we say that that's what you should do. Now, obviously, since most people don't do it, obviously, it's not worth it.
Inherently,
experientially, it doesn't seem to be the experience of the pleasure. It doesn't seem to be worth the pain. Otherwise, people would be involved themselves in these terrible pains in order to get the pleasures, right? So therefore, since it isn't worth it, so we must say that that this type of enjoyment is not a worthwhile experience.
Yeah, but how do you feel it's limited to the condition and time?
That there is a pleasure. The only pleasure is the removal of pain.
Okay.
No, that was very bad because, you see, they're not worth it. Because nobody would indulge in those for the sake of the pleasures. So therefore, they must say those are not good.
In order to nature, which inherently involves pain, now how would we define what pleasure?
Which pleasures are nothing more than the removal of it? And they can't take it. It's disgusting. Can't stand it, right? You take the thing away. Phew, boy. Tremendous. That's the removal of pain.
Take
the other one is a positive.
You want to learn.
What's the paper? You want to learn. Put the paper tomorrow. Okay, that's a separate type of pain. But now we're talking about the energy itself. Or no. Right? Okay, see, this is what last year I think
You're not learning.
Okay. You gave a good criterion. Physical needs, right? Physical needs, okay.
Now, what are we up to now?
Removal of pain.
Good job.
Nature of the pleasure.
Nature of the pleasure. Right? Okay, like for instance, if they had a big meal, you can't even think about the enjoyment of food anymore. Right? Why? I see another experience. Why? Because the Because the removal pain is all pain, right? Okay. In that area, you really have three things in this area. You have three things. You have food, right? Which is hunger and thirst, right? Hunger and thirst. Then you have sleep. You want to stay sleep for some type of enjoyment, I don't know, but anyway, sleep, we're going to keep it in the
job. Yeah.
Sleep, right, okay. Sleep, and then you have
attention. Boy, sleep's great.
Yeah.
in the end of sexual. Okay? That's why in the sexual as well, after the satiation, so there's no more enjoyment, but the simply the removal of the sexual tension, the pain. So those three, and those are the big drives. Those big drives are really mirages. What do I mean by mirages? Mirages mean like this.
They're not pleasure and heaven.
Like my person on a debt. So he sees a tremendous amount of, for him, the glass of water. The greatest,
he has to experience the pain. What? Really, has to experience the pain. It really has to
the
make
only
pleasure.
Right, that's right. In order to have the pleasure from these three, you have to be experiencing a tremendous amount of pain. So therefore, we must say that these enjoyments are nothing more than removal of pain. So therefore, insofar as they're concerned, they're inherently not enjoyments, they're painful. Okay?
Very good.
Good?
No, I like that.
In the physiology of sexuality, you'll find out that definitely after the thing, there's no enjoyment. The guy has no enjoyment anymore. Why? Because no attention is gone. So therefore, it's only the release of the pain. So understand the pain. It's no difference. If you want to look at it honestly, there's no difference between the fantasy. You see, the fantasy is attachment to sexual. Just like fantasies on what a breast is not eating, attachment to food. Because you want to get the meals. Right? There's no such thing as pain. Same thing, exact same thing. They all think it's that. Can you see that a person can enjoy things? So therefore, it's like this. That insofar as a person, let's say, for instance, when a person learns, we know that he channels the energy away from the sexual, right? So insofar as he does that, he definitely is doubly rewarded. Why?
Yeah. Pleasure is a mirror.
First of all, he has the pleasure, and secondly, he doesn't have the pain.
The guy's in learning. He's getting the pleasure of learning. He's moving his energy from the physical, right?
Right.
So there's also moving the possibility of getting future pain.
Right.
Future.
Right. Yeah.
Oh. When a guy's learning, he gets the pleasure of learning. He gets the pleasure of learning, but also he's moving his energy from the physical. Now, the physical involves pain, right? So as we remove the energy, we remove the possibility of having future pain. Because it's moving the amount of energy in that area. So we less desire for it.
That's one way. It's also...
You know psychologically that a person can divert the energy. When a person is involved in learning, does not have the desire for sex, right? The Rama is in fact psychologically effective. In fact, it was noted by the ancient...
What?
The Rama mentioned...
Hey,
there's a lot of intellectuals who escape the neuroses, even though really they should have. They have all the mishigas, they have all the
things.
They
have the fuel going there.
Yeah. He says, but because they have that outlet, they have that vent where they get rid of a lot of energy and thought, you know, and therefore the neuroses never come up. Because you need a certain amount of energy in order to go back and to break open the areas of fixation. Areas of fixation explode because of pressure of the energy.
You say about the physical law?
So instead of doing that.
So they demonstrate it psychoanalytically. But the Chazal knew
about
planets. They
have by physical also.
Observation.
Physical also.
Right.
When you channel all your energy to the physical.
Correct. Let me tell you physical.
To a tennis game.
That's true.
Right. In other words, not necessarily a din and intellectual.
Yeah, that's true. But then you have the other thing. We're just talking about these three. Just talking about these three. Every argument stands on its own. Correct. Yes.
I have a question.
But we have shown why playing tennis will not get rid of it that well. Why? Because of all the other arguments, you see the inherent limitation. So therefore, we'll never get rid of it. Therefore, we can't get rid of it totally. So that's why the only one they can get rid of is the guy that's totally involved in the thought, because of the other arguments.
No, but what I just want to say, one thing. We say at that point when the pain's there,
right.
You should choose the other one.
Yeah, which one should you choose?
Oh, you should still choose the learning. I'll show you why. Because even though at that moment the both satisfied equally, he'll decrease the amount of pain he'll have next time. Because the energy that was going towards special desire is not going to learning.
We're talking about right now. What are you bringing next time? We're talking about right now.
Yeah, right now, which one should you choose?
Right now, right. Which one should you take and enjoy?
I mean, he's saying
right?
Just when you think about it, then automatically.
Right?
That's true.
Right?
So therefore, going of course, even a person that's in learning will eventually have to stop learning in order to eat, because the pain will mount to such a degree he's going to have tremendous amount of pain, won't be able to learn anymore. Right? Okay? Or else he'll get weak, whatever. He's going to have any pain. He has to understand what this is. That's why we say, that's why Yadis is the realistic approach to Derechaim. The only scientific approach to Derechaim. Why? Well, it's like this. Yadis does not maintain that a person shouldn't eat, whether a person should sleep, whether a person should have sex. Yadis maintains that a person should take care of these needs, but only insofar as it's necessary that it to remove the pain to the point where he can involve himself with the real jerk. You understand what I mean?
Right.
But he definitely, what Avi, what you're saying is that definitely there's going to be a time when he has pain, don't you say?
I see.
He's saying it's,
you're questioning which pleasure should he partake in.
Right, overall. Right. Which one? How should his, what should his format
right.
be?
Right. Now, the argument is that
what the pain comes.
That's right.
But the person always has the pain, doesn't he?
Right. So that's what we said.
Whatever he should always eat.
No, he doesn't always have the pain. That's not true. Who has the pain? Twice a day or something.
Right, twice a day.
As a matter of fact, the person who's involved in learning more...
The person who eats a lot. What's the difference? The person keeps eating a lot until he gets heavier and heavier. And the heavier he gets, the more pain he gets, the more desire he eats, the more expensive. Like a glutton. Like King Farouk, right? That was Farouk, you know?
Yeah,
he was a guy, he had to rebound his life. He lived his life Kool-Aid type. That was his whole purpose in life. Nothing else.
Did he enjoy it?
What?
Did he enjoy it?
Complete pain. His wife's pain. Now he weighed about 350 pounds, but not because he couldn't get Charles already, but it was a shita with him. The shita was that he should be very, very heavy. Because the heavier you are, the bigger your stomach is, the more time you have, the more you can eat, and the more you can enjoy the more hungry you are, so you want to enjoy food, right?
A small stomach.
How much can
you
enjoy? How much can you enjoy? Very low, right? So it has to be very big,
leave it
works out
that he didn't see.
But that's the argument. This will say that better have a short good
life.
And the more you're involved in the more you're involved in thinking, the more you can put off the dire deity.
In the same manner, people attempt to arouse the whole world. I mean, there's arousal of the sexual libido. That's basically the whole everything you should do, the movies, everything you get from that. The whole life. So now we have to define that. To arouse the pain, you see, and then to remove the pain. So they're in a constant state of pain and pleasure, pain and removal of pain. But we say, on the contrary, we say that a person that learns, he isn't in real pleasure, he's being avoided in real pain.
Let's say a guy's learning, right?
Right.
I can only learn so far as he's done, right?
What?
When a guy's involved in learning, right? He only continues to learn as long as he desires to, right?
Right.
The desire is there.
No. That's any involvement. See, we're
right, right, right.
We're differentiating. A person can only do anything as long as he desires to do it. A person can taste good tasting food as long as he desires there, right? A person could. That's something which you come
to
every
occasion. Right?
Yeah,
it's
something
here.
Else. Right, it's inherent in the thing itself.
But you will need.
That's right. See, of course a person will do something like that. That necessarily...
I just want to say that that fear, desire is not conscious. Whereas over here, the pain is something that's completely conscious as long as he's having the enjoyment.
The pain is completely conscious.
Go
into a life where you should cause yourself pain in order to remove it. You follow what I mean? Should a person involve himself, that's what most people do, most people involve themselves in a life, when they cause themselves pain in order to get in order to have their removal, right? We say that's a foolish thing, if that's the case, then take it cheap out, so I'm doing this, right?
Why people do it?
Why they do it? That's the first one. That enjoyment, which after satiation there is no more enjoyment left, is obviously an enjoyment which inherently lives on pain. You see?
Yeah, but the thought doesn't exclude something like the Oscar, right?
No.
This just is the basic drives. Right. Basic drives. But we say that it's important because it's a large part of life.
Yeah, I'll become a musician.
No, but then you will not...
How about the case of the guy who paints all day?
Under the template. This is qualitative. The wives of the people who live the different these different types of lives. Personal lives of the individuals who live these different lives, right? Now we said like this. We said there's one psychological rule. Psychological rule is as follows. And this we also put it in when we discussed our mission. The rule is that there's a rule of conservation of psychological energy, which means basically that there's a certain amount of energy that seeks satisfaction, right? And that if this energy is thwarted in one area, it'll express itself in another area. Right? Like, it's a psychological rule of conservation of energy, which means that if a person does not get the happiness that he needs from one area, he will get it from another area. You can't just stop. A person can never lower the need, that need for the happiness. It's going to have to express itself somewhere. And we get instances from practical instances like that. Alright, I'll do something else. We'll attempt to substitute one gratification for another. Why? Because the rule is that you can't possibly just get rid of the desire of happiness. So there's a process of substitution which will take place. Or else, if not so, then the result is unhappiness. It's also a result. The person can be unhappy too. In other words, if the person does not meet with success in attaining his goal, and he can't find anything else, then he will be unhappy. Right? Okay, I think it's another phenomenon in your mind. That's fantasy formation. Fantasy formation. Okay? Fantasy formation is always called daydreaming. Right? Okay. Now we said, what is the cause of daydreaming? What is the cause? By the way, it's a phenomenon psychologists say it's prevalent in practically everybody's life, and that it's something which exists to a great degree in most people. Something which is basically a basic part of their needs. So what is the cause of the daydream?
If you're not happy, the dream is not enough.
Ah, right. In other words, that when the happiness cannot be achieved in the world of reality, so the mind doesn't give up, right? By the mind, I mean the psyche, not just the intelligent part, but the whole mind, the mind is the psyche, the whole psyche, all right, not just the intellectual. Okay, so the mind doesn't give up, but the mind starts fantasizing and achieves a measure of enjoyment through the fantasy itself. See, of course. The measure that it achieves is not as great as it would in reality. It's not as great as it would in reality, unless the person is insane. In insanity, then the person thinks that the fantasy gives him as much pleasure as the reality. He thinks it's real. But as long as he is normal, so he knows it's only a fantasy, and since the mind, the intelligence, cannot go along with it, apparently the difference is simply that in the normal person, so the fantasy can't achieve its full pleasure. Why? What prevents it from achieving its full pleasure? Because the mind is reality-oriented, see? Once the mind is orientated in terms of reality, so what happens is that the mind cannot really accept the phenomenon 100% because reality isn't yet verified. Okay? So that the total enjoyment isn't there. However, in insanity, the acceptance of the phenomenon is not based anymore upon the reality principle. But the person is insane to me. The fantasy to them is real. The mind will accept phenomena based just upon the fantasy. Whereas in the normal human being, the acceptance of the phenomena, the mind cannot accept, cannot be convinced of the phenomena unless the reality goes along with it. And since the reality doesn't go along with it, so therefore the phenomena it's a funny state. It's like semi taking place. Part, yeah, part not, because part of the mind accepts it, part of the mind doesn't accept it. You see?
You can deal with it.
You said that you must have a measure of unhappiness, right? If you don't have something that you want, right? Okay, you agree with that, right? Okay. And you get partial pleasure out of the fantasy, right? But not complete, otherwise you wouldn't need any more. Right? Okay, so therefore we can conclude that you're not the same. Yeah, okay. Good. So now, so therefore, so everybody follows that, that's the structure of fantasy. Now, so where does it leave us? So it leaves us with one thing. It leaves us for a criterion of happiness. Criterion of happiness. What would the criterion of happiness be? He, in other words, the fantasies comes from the lack of consumption of the energy for enjoyment in the present. And since he can't consume the energy from the enjoyment of the present, he projected into the future. Stop fantasizing, right? So the happiness can be measured by the amount, an inverse ratio between happiness and the amount of fantasies, right? The greater the happiness, the less the fantasies, right? The greater the fantasies, the less the happiness, right?
Inverse ratio.
Ratio? Oh, okay. There's the reality principle. You see, the stage from early childhood. The difference between early childhood and between the later development of the child is that there's a process that goes on during childhood in which the child's enjoyment starts projecting itself to the outside world. In other words, it acquires the external world. You see, that's the reality principle. If there were no reality principle, you'd have no need to have anything from the outside world. All you'd be able to do is just fantasize everything. Now, a person is in a state of insanity regresses to that early stage. Those psychological phenomena. So you can't possibly derive the enjoyment, total enjoyment out of the fantasy, because what do you do with the reality principle? The reality principle is there. You see, you have to negate the reality principle. Now, once you negate the reality principle, you can't just say, well, I'll turn it off now. I mean, the principle is there. The principle works in the mind. So therefore, since the principle works, it will prevent you. This reality principle will prevent you from achieving total satisfaction.
Is it possible
to
what is it there? How do you know that it's there?
How do we know it's there? Because
in other words,
you see, everything in the person's life must have a base in reality. See, every enjoyment he has to go through the external world to get it. And he can't just fantasize a thing. In other words, that's the developmental stage from the child, from early childhood. That's the change that goes on with the child. From an early childhood, it's fantasized. Then it's not serious. You need these things in the external world. There's a psychological development. In which the external world takes on a place. And the child must achieve things from the external world. Without that, he'd be dead. Because if you didn't deal with the external world, then the car is coming at you 50 miles an hour. You just stand there. Because the external world plays a role. And the fact you jump away is because the external world is the one that has taken over. That's the reality principle. That's the reality principle. Now you can't. Yeah. So then, since there's reality principle, you can't get the germ out of the fence zone. You see? But if there was no reality principle, that's what I said, the insane can do it. If you say there's no reality principle, that's insanity. What's the operation function? Okay? But anyway, that's why initially the energy goes through the actual physical phenomena, and then only in the secondary way does it go to the fantasy. Why? Because of the reality principle. Now, whether we like the reality principle or not, I mean, it's there. You can't argue with it. Since it's there, it definitely plays a role. We're reducing the enjoyment. Will reduce the enjoyment of fantasizing. Okay? And we say, and this proof is based upon the lives of those people, different types of people. And now, we can take a look at the lives of different people as a whole, as a group, and see which ones have the best life. Okay, anybody want to bring in this? Right? Is it true that, can we say, generalize? On the whole, it says that he was involved in money and has fantasies of making more money?
Yeah, that's what he means. He don't agree with it. That's what he means to.
What's it mean?
Money.
The money's only means.
No, but he has fantasies of being more, that means.
So when he gets all the money he needs, he keeps making more money.
Right. Eventually it becomes an end.
Right. Why is it that those who have sufficient money to last them for at least two or three generations still keep on going and
because the two or three generations are not.
Many individuals, people of highest esteem also. The high position doesn't prevent the trick from
Your money is in terms of what? Either it's in terms of the means, in terms of the ego, right? Or else the making of money is in terms because of the sense, because of pleasure. Because of pleasure. Right, pleasure. In other words, it's pleasure to wrap the money, right?
Right.
So let's take each one, right? All right, so you have the life of the playboy, that's the pleasure, right? Then you have the life of the moneymaker for honor, which we can equate with the life of the politician, which is the exact same thing, because the politician is also for honor, right? Whether it's the means of money or not. Well,
see, well this is not maybe just the sense
of enjoyment from making money. What do you mean?
Oh, wait.
Life with either one, there is always the fantasy making. There is always these people will always have to have by nature, and they will always have fantasy. So therefore, insofar as they have fantasy, we say that they're unhappy. Yes? Money and joy is a very powerful force. Now, if a thing is a powerful force in the mind, usually there's a rule in psychology that people are influenced by multi-determination. I mean, it's an interesting thing. That's why it's important to know how the mind works. It's the mind, I mean, that thinks tremendously. If you don't really know, you could be fooled. You see? The mind usually works on multi-determination, which means that a person will do something for five bad reasons quicker than for one good reason. Okay? That's multi-determination. Now, in other words, emotionally, of course, the emotions are hit by numbers. Sure, I got a lot of reasons. What?
What
would
it be like?
California. So five reasons why it's now the best thing for you in California. It will be more influential than if you show one good logical reason.
Five bad reasons?
A powerful drive like money must be really multi-determined. It must be multi-determined. Really, one day we should really stand and analyze what it is. And one time we broke down 6 or 7 motives involved future prospect of his life insofar as it is in the future. In other words, insofar as the person's imagination projected into the future, so therefore death is a terrible thing because his enjoyment is in the future and you're cutting him off from his pleasure. But insofar as all his energy is consumed in the present, so the future doesn't really matter because he's living completely in the present. In other words, the psychology is really it's a Hoskin effect.
Right. Freud said that he would have cancer at the end?
Yeah, right. What's that?
And he told the doctor that as soon as I can't think of
So the Ramban explains what does the pasuk mean. It says, "What does it mean, zokein v'saveya?" Zokein, all the saveya, satisfied. Ramban describes it very well. Doing this, he says.
What's the
point of that? Zaki the Surveyor. He says, Shirah kol nishamay slibai. He says, everything he desired. The Sova kol teva. The chain is sva yamin. She sova nafshe be yamin. Here's his very good next sentence. Lo yisave she yechachu boi hayamin. Lo yisave dover she yechachu boi hayamin. He says, he did not. Lo yisave dover she yechachu boi hayamin. He didn't care for anything new that the days will bring. There was nothing new that the days could bring that could give him a chance. See? But why? What's the pshat? It says, Shiroh kol mishalas libay. Why? Because mishalas libay were not a word of a different type. Of course, mishalas libay were different. That's why it wasn't Zakin Sareya that he was satisfied and we're not satisfied. The reason why he was satisfied is because of the nature of the satisfaction. Because of the type of life he lived. You understand what I mean? You understand? So that's why by Yomas Avram Zokei Visavaya, because his Mishalas Liba were capable of being satisfied. So that's why it was Zokei Visavaya. But the average person does not die Zokei Visavaya. Why? Because on the contrary, his enjoyments are those which always blend themselves into projection to fantasies into the future. There's a Chazal also like that. Now Chazal is a Chazal. Chazal say, Ein Adam Nifter Min Ha'olam V'Chatzi Taivasa B'Yaleh. Person does not leave this world with half this taiva, the other in his hands. The fantasy is funny, but not the other. You see? What are Chazal saying, really? That the physical world cannot possibly satisfy the desire. It's incapable. You see? Since it's incapable, so the more he gets, so
on the contrary, the greater the proportion, the more he starts projecting into the future. The energy is never consumed. So therefore, when he dies. The opposite of a Brahm.
Yeah.
Now, Brahm is Zakim is a Veya. Why? Because the nature of his enjoyment is a painful of satisfaction. See, it's ruthless. But the other way, the world of Taiva in the country, and this Mr. Mabu has to tell us about it. So that's the qualitative aspect. Mm-hmm. That's the qualitative. Another argument for the qualitative. All right? So I guess, Ukenyan Shanema Bedovit. Remains beside the Seva Teva, Savayonim, Vaisha Vakavai. That's what it says. The Lucy for Chazde Hashem Bitsadikim, Umida Teva Bohem, Shaloyis Abu Bemaisrais. So he says two things. Sipur Chazde Hashem Bitsadikim, Umida Teva Bohem, Shaloyis Abu Bemaisrais. Two things. That it's Chazde Hashem and Mida Teva. Of course, what is the. How do both work? Neither time then we explain that since Lee is Abu the Maestres, that's what he says. In other words, Maestres means the physical title. They only came for the real enjoyment, so therefore they can get satisfied. But Chazdei Hashem also, insofar as that God makes it possible for them to have that life. You see, that's the whole concept of the Brachas and the Qualis and the Terror. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, no, it's Shulam. The big Kasha, how could you have a Terror say that the Bracha is, you'll have all the physical things? So we say that's not the Bracha. And the qual is to get diseased and get sick. And that's what we say, that's not the qual of. The qual is not to have the terror. Not to get sick and the qual of. That's not the best thing. Per se, it's not really the bad thing. The bad thing is if you don't have the real life. You don't have the real Aranos Chayim. So Aranos, like I said, true, he says. All the brachas and the qual is tell you is one thing. That if you live the correct life, then that Kodesh Baruch Hu makes it possible that you can continue that life. That's what the brachas only means. In other words, all the brachas in the Torah, it says, b'chaldam yashar leishon, and all those, you have everything you need. All these brachas is a bracha so that you won't have to be preoccupied with the physical so you can spend your time
physical,
in learning.
Physical
see?
Disease is why we make pain.
And then it gets to you. But once it comes in, it takes away. That's what we said also about Eretz Yisrael. Same exact thing. Why does the pasuk say by Eretz Yisrael? And immediately, then it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will chase you out of Eretz Yisrael, is exactly what the history portrayed. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is really a means to achieve the highest type of life. You see? But in other words, the whole concept of having our own place, of having a place for the Ummah Yisraelis to live on, is only so that we can live in the correct life. But what happened? But people made a mistake. They thought the concept is to have it for the enjoyment. But I know a goodness. So you have a physical enjoyment from it. That power. Then it became a means for destruction. So the country said, all right, so it became a means for bad. So then they brought it to take away.
What
are these two
things?
Bad, so then we'll take away. What? Then it says, Pesach Hashem will give Levut Yishmor Mitzvayso V'Tekev Sheni. Levut Yishmor Mitzvayso V'Mishpata V'Kutkayso V'Asherech V'Tzachayet. Pentecho V'Sabato U'Vashim Tevim Tivne V'Yashoftosh U'Lekarcha V'Tzayin V'Yir B'Yun V'Chesed V'Zor V'Yir B'Loch V'Chol Hashilach V'Yir B'Loch V'Rom L'Vavecha V'Shachachta S'Ad Hashem V'Akecha V'Tzayin 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 So the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael is that you should use it as a means. But once you use it as an end in itself, then you'll be chased out just like they were. You'll be destroyed just like they were. It gives a description of what happens when it comes to first comes the materialist, and then it says v'hoya right after that. It says v'hoya m'shafes tishkachas v'shem lekecha. Just like they were destroyed, they were chased out of Israel, so you will also be.
How do you know that? So how do you know it's only
So what does the pasuk say? that if you use neural net server really is yours only as a means to live the correct life. But then only use it like the other ones live, so then you get thrown out too. Because then it's all becomes a means for evil. Right? And then he says, and also we'll need a type of a hand. And then it is a good nature in them, shall you say, the right choice. So it's two things, Krasde Hashem and Sabina Tech Bahem. Why is it both? Need a type of Bahem because they desire the good thing. Oh. But it's true that they desire a good thing, but they have to, but God brings about the way that they can have the good thing. You see? That's the Ashgacha. The Ashgacha operates in a way that the tzaddik can have what he needs when he has a good life. You see, because let's face it, let's say the tzaddik wants to learn better. But something prevents him from learning, so therefore he can't have a good life. You see? So that's what this is. Krasde Hashem but Sabina will need a type of man. It's a combination of two things. His nature is a good nature. He wants really the good, that which is really good. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings it about in a way that he has that life. So therefore, he has total satisfaction. He doesn't care where he is. And he has no desire. There's no imagination. No fantasy, no daydreaming. He has exactly, precise, totally satisfied.
Who is it? Who is it? If you're not satisfied with one,
the Bechir is the Bechir is the case of that point.
Gave him all the title that he wanted.
The like to my Shinemar, the like to my Shinemar, Bishorhan Hashem.
not like it says about the rest of the people, which professor should he quote? Which professor should he quote? The gracious job of Amru, I can report to Marilyn, the Sasikin Mat and Storin, she was the Lutheran of the Mabo, the Nasham Sezeo, the Hain Yeshenim, the Seru Rakapalim Baza, the Pishma of Kasa Shema, the Sva, the Sva, the Mabo, the Sva, 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 the Rabbah on, and I asked you, the Chazal is mentioning a gracious Rabbah on Oyev Kesef, on Kehelas. Oyev Kesef, wait for a second. Okay. That is the last proof. The last proof is like this. That, last proof is, oh no, I'll just put it back. One time I want to bring you the proof that this is the existence of the soul. That the soul exists. Right? The existence of the soul, as far as the message is, it's as far as we see the ideas of the universe. In other words, like this. You think the question is, when a person thinks of an idea, is that a reality? Or is it really a way of condensing facts and putting it into a thing called a theory, called an idea? Or the idea really exists. And this idea exists, and since it does exist, it determines all the factors that are under it. Okay? Another way. Let's say, for instance, we work out an idea. We're going to swallow it, right? You have seven halachos, and you have one swallow that goes through it. Now, the one svara, does this svara really exist as such? Does it really have existence? Or is svara merely a way of condensing a lot of facts? I have seven phenomena, and the mind condenses them. You can describe them in one way. And so you give one thing.
Another, is it an independent fact, or is it...
Or does it really exist?
It is a fact, right?
That's right. It is an independent fact. It's a property of the human mind. In other words, your head works out a svara. But in reality, no svara exists. It's a mechanism of the mind. Or no. Or really it exists and the mind perceives. In other words, like this. Let's take an example. Let's say, for instance, when you see something in reality. So the eye doesn't make it up. The eye merely perceives what exists in reality. Right? Through the transmission of light, the object is seen by the eye. But the eye picks it up. Right? The eye picks it up. Okay. But it really exists. That's one way. But let's say, for instance, a fancy formation. That's a mechanism of the mind. Right? Person daydreams, so it's made up of words. Doesn't have any basic reality. And the question is, what about thinking? What about svara? Does a svara really exist? You see? Does a thought, an idea, let's say for instance you have an idea. Does it really exist? Or an idea about the universe? Does that idea about the universe really exist? Or is it merely a way of contracting, a merely convenient way of describing seven or eight phenomena? Convenient way to describe it for an idea. So the mechanism of the mind. The mind makes it up. You're not perceiving ideas, you're constructing ideas. That's the basic question. Do you perceive ideas or do you construct ideas? These are ideas. And the mind really perceives, just like the eye perceives the wall. You see? So the mind perceives ideas. The ideas really exist. Or do we say no? The mind constructs ideas. No such thing as ideas. It doesn't exist. Something in the mind, is a mechanism of the mind to make up ideas, a factory for ideas. And you take a look at the phenomenon of the external world, and all you do is you simply manufacture a bunch of ideas. This you consider, you call this thought, you call this idea. But it doesn't really exist. You follow? Okay. Can I understand real life? First of all, why is it? Why is it? If it's just a crazy thing that we have in our heads that manufactures ideas, why is it that everything that we examine always falls in line with those ideas? See, if reality didn't lend itself to this, but just a crazy thing like an imagination and a thing in the mind, if you imagine things in the mind, you're not going to find the replica in reality. You're not going to find it. I mean, the chance of finding an imagination in reality is one in a million. I don't know. A person might imagine a certain type of instinct, and they don't find it really exists. But that's certainly not the rule. That's actually the rule.
No,
right?
but your imagination is based on what incoming data.
Correct. Right. That's true.
Yeah, but something that you haven't seen before.
In other words, if you imagine something you haven't seen before, the chances that you're taking all this data, putting it together in a way that you can find the same thing in reality are very slim.
But normally
right?
You don't. But
the other way is by the way, say, what's that? We have this. If you have this thing, you must have this, and therefore this must be this until you come to the voice. Two ways, there's two directions that an argument to follow. Okay. So at any rate, getting back to this point, the point is like this. That if we should say it's just something that the mind makes up, right? But if there's no reality there, so the question is why do phenomena? First of all, why do phenomena change? Why do phenomena always wind themselves up this way? So you say they don't really wind themselves up this way, but the person lines them up. He doesn't make them lines up. But there's one case which is very difficult. That is prediction. In other words, when a person, for instance, works out a theory and he has five facts in front of him, right? And he works out a theory, but according to this theory, fact 6, 7, 8, 9 should be true too. He has no way of knowing it at the time. Then later, when you check for those facts, you find that they work exactly the way they do. And the question is, one second, more than summing up
coincidence.
How come all phenomena fall out of this theory? There must be an element of truth. What does truth mean? And there must be a reality there. There must be an existence of ideas. What is an existence of ideas? It means there's another world that exists besides the physical world.
It could be that
about 1920, by the turn of the century. Why? Because Einstein came with his new formulation, and everybody argued with him, it said it was wrong. And according to him, they came out about five or six different things that they had no way of knowing whether it was true or not. The science, the technology wasn't advanced enough to be able to check these things, you see? One of the things was that the couple of stars that are present in the daytime, according to him, will be a little bit different than they are at nighttime because of the power of the sun, because of the sun. But the only thing is, you could never see them in the daytime because the sun's there. You can't see the stars, right? But then in 1921, there was an eclipse. So there was an opportunity to see those stars during the daytime. Okay? So they had the observatory in England was ready. They had the best chronometers to measure exactly the arc. And they found that it was just about precisely the way he said it. So, after that, Einstein wasn't really too moved about it, because he was convinced that he was right. But after that, he went to Mach. Mach was his teacher, a philosophy teacher. Mach held the opposite way. Mach says, hell, that it's just a month. The only thing is just summarizing all the phenomena, and then he calls it a theory, but there's no real reality there. So I went back to Mach, and he asked him, he said, let's say, for instance, he gave him the experiment. Let's say, for instance, you have five phenomena, and technology isn't advanced enough to be the next one. And according to the theory, it comes out that there should be another phenomenon. And then you take a look and you find a phenomenon. What would you say then? They said they agreed. He agreed to this. That's the case that it is. But he said he didn't know. His mouth was very old. He didn't know whether it really agreed or whether it wasn't an expert or whether it really agreed. But at any rate, the argument stands on its own. That argument would tend to indicate, to a very, very great degree, that the ideas have a basis in reality. And when we say, when the Navi says, Chukei Shamayim V'aretz Laitamti, Chukei Shamayim V'aretz, means laws of nature, Chukei Shamayim V'aretz, which means that there are laws which actually exist. So besides the physical, there are ideas that exist. You see? Now once we posit the existence of ideas, which means another type of reality, then when we say a person perceives reality, so what are we saying? When we say a person perceives this reality, what are we saying? We're saying by definition, that there must be another part of his nature, which is non-physical, which perceives the ideas. Because if man is only the physical, there are two realms of existence, there's the physical and there's the ideational, right? And it happens, so the physical can't perceive the ideational. So you must say there's a part in man which is similar to that other existence, which is ideas. Right? And just like ideas do not decay and do not corrupt, because inherently it is not in their nature to decay and corrupt, an idea never gets old, that's why an old fire is always good. So therefore, that part of man which perceives these things also can never decay, can never be corrupted, so that it can exist forever. See? Now, once we posit this, once we say this, it comes out like this. Insofar as a person lives the life for which he partakes of this, because that Olam Haba is not such a mysterious thing, but Olam Haba is a natural result. Why? Because insofar as a person lives the life in which he partakes of these ideas, the ideas themselves are eternal, so therefore he himself is to that degree eternal. But insofar as his existence is physical, you see, once again, insofar as his existence is physical, so then he himself is physical. Right? You follow? So therefore it comes along here. Comes with this another reason why, another argument in favor of living the life of eternal. Why? Because that life, you understand, that life is one which necessarily results in a type of enjoyment which is eternal, whereas the other one doesn't. You follow what I mean?
No?
No follow? Okay. Let's work on we don't follow. So therefore there's two worlds, right? There's the physical and there's the ideational.
Right.
Now, insofar as man perceives the ideational, so it means he must have something in that perceives it, right? Right, okay. Now that thing that perceives it must be of the same nature as the ideational.
Right.
Otherwise I can't perceive it. In other words, we say there's two worlds, right? There's the physical and there's the non-physical. Now, if he perceives the non-physical, so he must have something in him which is akin to that non-physical. Otherwise, he wouldn't perceive it as much as it. Can a rock perceive the idea?
Can a rock perceive it?
Rock, they require physical senses, doesn't have to operate on a physical basis?
Yes.
Right? Oh, because it's a physical thing. So inherently, the physical thing has to be akin to another physical property. In other words, you have to have the physical ability. It has to be a physical ability because it's dealing with the physical. So therefore, if it's an idea, so there must be an ideational ability. It must be akin to the idea. Otherwise, it couldn't perceive it. It would have no connection to it.
A rock is physical, and yet it can't perceive the other physical
object. Yeah, we're not saying it, but the sensory
system... Well, we see the sense, but if it should, we know that it must be has something physical in it, right? If it should be able to sense something physical,
right.
And so we see a weak and sense of being non-physical.
The world of ideas is the world of something, right?
Right.
Now, the world of the physical has physical properties occur to it, right?
Yes.
Physical properties are subject to decay, subject to corruption, to breaking down, right? So therefore, the body, the goof of the person, which is subject to these things, will break down, will fall away. But in the world of ideas, we've seen a breakdown of this. There's an idea breakdown from
the truth never changes.
Doesn't change, right? It's the same idea, and it's just as strong today as it was yesterday.
Yes.
Right? Doesn't get any weaker.
Right.
So therefore, that you see inherently in that area, the nature of that thing is to remain eternal, right? Right?
Right.
It's not subject to the corruption of the physical, right? Now, insofar as man has something within him which is akin to that, so therefore that thing also will never be able to be corrupted, right?
Right.
Right? So therefore, naturally, I think it's forever.
We don't have to bring the point that,
what is the concept of Olam Haba? In other words, if we say that God wants man to be the cause of his own good. So now, how do we define good now? Good is being defined as how much, in other words, that he has the ability to what structural change does he make when he kills himself? Right. So in other words, the structural change is that he makes himself akin to the world of ideas rather than the physical. Correct? In other words, the more he lives the life which involves the chokhmah, so the more that part of him, the more he changes himself proportionally, you see, into the part that's akin to the ideas, right? So that the more he is eternal, right? Because that part is eternal, right? So therefore, Olam Haba loses its mysterious. It's not mysterious at all. It's a natural result of living the correct life. You follow? Right?
Yeah.
Is it? So therefore, we say there's another argument why a person should live their life. That's the metaphysical argument. That argument is like this, that insofar, well, we've shown that really our pleasures concern everything else and it's less, right? Oh, but now we're showing something else, that this has another quality, the quality of eternity, which the other one doesn't have. So certainly this is a better preoccupation than the other one. You follow what I mean? In other words, it follows, therefore, since Alamaba was a natural result, so therefore it follows that he who lives this type of life will be able to do it for eternity. Right now, let's say you have two pleasures. One pleasure you'll be able to do for a few years, the other pleasure you'll do for eternity. Which one is better? Which one is better? So therefore we say that this is a better, therefore we say this is certainly a better thing to do. Therefore we say this is better time, it's a better life. It's better, in other words, this argument shows not only that it's better in terms of here, but it's better because it's another thing. The nature, the inherent nature is that its existence is forever, whereas the other one is not that inherent nature.
Is that the true law in Hamilton?
We just did.
The eye is just
so first you have the physical phenomena, right? Then their ideas are formed about the physical phenomena, right?
Right.
Okay. So therefore, the ideas in themselves, those ideas are formed, they're physical phenomena.
The ideas themselves, they're not physical.
And what forms the ideas?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Yeah. That's the same question by God, isn't it?
Yeah. In other words,
when you're talking about the series, you're saying the series caused the physical world to work.
Right.
Right? So you're saying it must be a connection.
What's the relationship?
Same thing.
That's true. The problem is the relationship. That is a problem.
Same
problem you have with the creation of the universe. Your problem. Creation of the universe by God. But God is not physical, so I'm going to create the physical. What is it? There is one, and that is one solution. The relationship between the two. How they relate. The point is, when we say that God perceives the cycle, that's a different thing altogether. That's why the one who created, in other words, the one who created the ear can certainly hear. That's what Dabar Mel says. The one who created the eye can certainly see. So, and after Keres asked, he said, oh, so the one who created the stomach can certainly eat.
Good morning.
Yeah. We don't say God eats, but we say God sees. He says it's only because to man that's not a bit. Seeing is like an actual
bit.
That's what we don't say that about God. That's only in terms of Marshall.
We only mean Steve as far as the spiritual God.
The Rambam says the question is a stupid question. Why is it a good question? Seeing if you don't know the physical things that the eye observes. In order to invent it, he has to have knowledge of those things.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you see. It doesn't mean that you invented the eye see.
Yeah.
It means in order to invent the eye, you must know how the nerve works, you must know what it's going to work on, and you must be aware of every single factor involved in creating an eye. So therefore, you must have knowledge of the physical.
But that,
he must have knowledge of particulars. That's what the Rambam says. But doesn't what's going to be meaning it. Okay. Of course, the one that made the stomach must know exactly how food works. I mean, how it works in the stomach. That's what they have knowledge.
What do you mean knows exactly how it works? I mean, the guy that makes the car doesn't know how it works.
Okay.
Yes, he does.
What are you saying by God?
The guy that first invented the car. Not a guy that puts the car in the car in school and do this and that. But the first guy that invented the car, he knows how it works.
He doesn't know the
He must know the chambers. The eye definitely has knowledge of all the physical things. That God doesn't know. So he says, no, he says, that's crazy to say God doesn't know the physical. The one who creates the I must know, because otherwise how can he create the I? The I is another physical thing, must be another physical.
Yeah. By the fact that we say that the series called.
And then when we say that the physical relates to the non-physical, we don't mean that its essence is the same. Right? There's some transition between the physical and the world.
Right. Right.
There definitely has to be some transition there, right? But the natures are different, correct? Right? However, now when you say that the mind perceives ideas, you see, and the mind is an area which inherently its nature is that it partakes of these things of ideas, right? Then you're speaking about the inherent nature of the thing, not just talking about the relationship. It's not just the relationship between the mind and the ideas, but this is an essential relationship. You see, there's an essential. The nature of the thing must be of that nature. Mm-hmm. See, there's two points. One is the transition. It's true. We have to know how to transition. There is a relationship, but there's two types. It's not essential. In other words, it's not essential. For instance, we can only see this more clearly once we clear up the problem exactly of relationships.
The essence of the mind is understanding. So if you say it can understand non-physical, so you must say that part of the essence of a physical thing is non-physical, which is an impossibility.
Exactly right.
But by the relationship between the theory and the non-physical, it's possible it's not an essential relationship.
That's not an essential relationship.
We're saying, you see over here in the proof, when you say that the physical can't understand the non-physical, right? Mm. So we're saying, what does the mind do? The mind perceives things, right?
Right.
So if you say perceives non-physical, so you're saying part of the essence of the mind is non-physical. Part of the essence of the physical is non-physical, which is an impossibility.
What?
What?
Have to say that.
Isn't that essential to the...
But over there, you see, but over there...
Essential to the physical...
Means that the blueprint for the whole creation was there before the creation was there. Because you can bring riots to the physical world, which of course is important.
That's what
Ramana says, insofar as the person has total knowledge of the real,
that way, because
the
more knowledge of the real
has, the more knowledge you have, the more we'll be able to see. They will prove the conclusions that were given to us in Sinai. Knowledge is, that's what Ramana says, what is knowledge? Knowledge is being able to prove in the Kriya what the Torah gave us on Sinai. So the more knowledge a person has, the more he can really see the truth of what was given on Sinai. Yeah, but this definitely is so. That Chazal say this, and Novi says that there are chukas shemayim v'aretz. Yad does definitely hold that ideas exist. The stakel b'aretz is bar alma. Ideas exist before the creation. That is one bracha, really, that's very important. The most important bracha. What is the bracha? And really, the Levana is just one, if you look at the bracha, the Levana is just one, mentions just one part of the phenomenon.
Yeah, hope is something that's done.
Yeah, Baravadar Sharakan of Allah Shem and Mamara Bar Shakim, Shakim is heaven, will grow to Kol Tzaval. Kol Tzaval Shemayim means the whole universe. Kol Kuzman and Nasan Lahem, Shemayim Yishanu Et Takiyam, which means that what prevents it from changing, it's not arbitrary. There's rule, there's law in nature. See? That's why the Gemara says this bracha.